Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the second canto, chapter 10, text number 32. So today's topic will be illusion of the soul. Gunatmakan indriyani Bhutadi Prabhava Guna Bhutadi Prabhava Guna Mana Sarva Vikaratma Mana Sarva Vikaratma Buddhir Vijnana Rupini Buddhir Vijnana Rupini Gunatmakan Indriyani Bhutadi Prabhava Guna Manasarva Vikaratma Buddhir Vijnana Rupini Gunatmakan Indriyani Bhutadi Prabhava Guna Manasarva Vikaratma Buddhir Vijnana Rupini Riyani. Gunatmakan Indriyani Bhutadi Prabhava Guna Manasarva Vikaratma Buddhir Vijnana Rupini Vaishnavis Gunatmakan Indriyani Bhutadi Prabhava Guna Manasarva Vikaratma Buddhir Vijnana Rupini Gunatmakan Indriyani Bhutadi Prabhava Guna Manasarva Vikaratma Vinityani Rupini Gunatmakan Indriyani Guna Atmikani, attached to the qualities, Indriyani, the senses, Bhuta Adi, material ego, Prabhava, influenced by Gunai, the modes of material nature, Mana, the mind. Sarva, all. Vikara, affection. Happiness and distress. Atma, form. Buddhi, intelligence. Vijnana, deliberation. Rupini, featuring. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The sense organs are attached to the modes of material nature, and the modes of material nature are products of the false ego. The mind is subjected to all kinds of material experiences, happiness and distress. And the intelligence is the feature of the mind's deliberation. Purport. Illusioned by the material nature, the living entity identifies with false ego. More clearly, when the living entity is entrapped by the material body, he at once identifies with the bodily relationships, forgetting his own identity as spirit soul. The false ego associates with different modes of material nature, and thus the senses become attached to the modes of material nature. Mind is the instrument for filling different material experiences, but intelligence is deliberative and can change everything for the better. The intelligent person, therefore, can attain salvation from the illusion of material existence by proper use of intelligence. An intelligent person can detect the awkward position of material existence and thus begin to inquire as to what he is, why he is subjected to different kinds of miseries, and how to get rid of all miseries. And thus, by good association, an advanced intelligent person can turn towards the better life of self-realization. It is advised, therefore, that an intelligent person associate with the great sages and saints who are on the path of salvation. By such association, one can receive instructions which are able to slacken the conditioned soul's attachment for matter. And thus, the intelligent man gradually gets rid of the illusion of matter and false ego, and is promoted to the real life of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Om Ajnana Tamanandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Sunmanitamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitamena Bhutale Sarmupagadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Translation again. The sense organs are attached to the modes of material nature, and the modes of material nature are products of the false ego. The mind is subjected to all kinds of material experiences, happiness and distress, and the intelligence is the feature of the mind's deliberation. So here we studied in previous classes the gross material elements that are provided by this universal form. And now we are going to, as this verse is explaining, the subtle material elements, the subtle body. And we'll try to understand this. First of all, what is illusion? And then these subtle energies that are mentioned here, the ego, basically the false ego, the mind, and the intelligence. So, first of all, illusion. Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, illusion by the material nature, or illusioned by the material nature, the living entity identifies with false ego. So here we see a screen with an image, and it appears to be something, yet it's a flat screen. The pencil actually cannot fall into that hole that you see there. So this gives us a little idea of how we are illusioned in this material world. And just see what we can do with another blank canvas or screen. You see, we are experiencing in this material world, Krishna is intelligent creation. And we're creating things on this screen of the sky. And we can only try to imitate Krishna. And in fact, that's why we're here, is to try to imitate Krishna. Actually, to be Krishna or to be Krishna's competitor. So just like in this particular painting, you can't smell those flowers. You can't taste those grapes or feel the peaches or hear those flies. It's just a reflection of the three primary colors, red, yellow, blue, and making various shapes and colors. So similarly, according to the three modes of material nature, in the material world, we have different shapes, colors, sizes, etc. So in the same way as we can't taste this particular painting, we can't really enjoy here in the material world. It's simply a reflection of the spiritual world. But see the talent of such a work of art. Just imagine the supreme talent and the power of Krishna and his different energies. So also in Krishna's canvas of the sky, as we mentioned yesterday, we can create things like gods, actually three-dimensional things, not just on flat screens or canvas. We can create things very small or extremely large, like luxurious mansions and vehicles, etc. And it's all according to the different resources we're given by Krishna. We're given different gross or subtle bodies. And according to how we think and the knowledge we acquire, we try to create things and relate to these different things. And we become attached to them. So first, now, the ego, as mentioned today. And this is what Einstein says, that the more knowledge, lesser the ego. Lesser the knowledge, more the ego. So it's important to get knowledge, as we know. And we know false ego is due to illusion, where we don't know so many things. Just like we're looking at the drawing, it looks like it's a whole, but it's actually not. Even though we know it isn't, we still misidentify with it. So despite knowledge, still we can misidentify with matter, and we're not able to leave this misidentification because we're influenced by a very powerful energy. And what is that energy? It's Maya. So it's not that we're just ignorant to these things, but we're actually being influenced by a very powerful, magical personality. This is Maya. We're being fooled by her. So just by knowledge alone, we can't overcome this illusion. Because we're in this, it's described as a prison house. We're being punished. And Maya is performing a thankless task to befool us and to punish us. So the body that we have, whether you have an Einstein body or any body, that body is a prison. And we're locked here in this prison by attachment. And in this prison, we're being tortured. Like sometimes you get whipped. And we're getting whipped by six things, six types of whips in the material world. Hunger, thirst, old age, disease, birth, and death. So, with knowledge, and later we'll understand intelligence, we can understand that we're actually a soul, we're not the body. There's a really nice verse in the second canto, and it describes how, just with a little intelligence and, in you know, contemplation, you can understand that you're not the body, but you're a soul, and that everything is being provided for you. But without, just with knowledge alone, it's impossible to understand this on your own. So we're living life from the soul, or living life from ego. Srila Prabhupada said in the purport, more clearly, when the living entity is entrapped by the material body, he at once identifies with the bodily relationships, forgetting his own identity
as spirit, soul.
So we have a path to take here. Depending on how you identify yourself, you'll go in a different direction. So the consciousness is covered, and it makes us forget ourselves and the Lord and misidentify with this body. And it also makes us absorbed in the modes of material nature. Srila Prabhupada also says in the purport that this false ego associates with different modes of material nature, and thus the senses become attached to the modes of material nature. So what happens in these modes of material nature? When we're in the material world and we identify with the body, then we become bhayam, we become full of fear. So there's that verse in the 11th canto, in chapter 2, text 37. Fear arises when the living entity misidentifies himself as the material body. Because of his absorption in the external illusory energy of the Lord. So we get absorbed in these things in this material world. So therefore we become attached. So that's how our attachment is, by this absorption. So we're absorbed in the external illusory energy of the Lord. When the living entity turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. This bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency for illusion called Maya. Therefore, an intelligent person should engage unflinchingly in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and his very life and soul. So that's the actual verse. It's that long. So Sridhar Swami brings in the purport there that there might be a question or an objection raised that since fear is caused by ignorance, then we could just dispel it by knowledge. There's no need to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the living entity's falsely identifying with his material body, his family, society, and so on. And all he has to do is simply give up this false identification. And then what will Maya be able to do? So actually, to counter this argument, there's the verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivihesha Gunamai Mamaya Duratima Mamaya, that this divine energy of mine, consistent of three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. But those who are surrendered unto Krishna, they can easily cross beyond it. So now we discuss the ego. Now let's go into the mind. It's described that the mind is like a mirror. And here we see a magical mirror one may recognize from a famous movie where Harry is looking into the mirror and it's bewitching him and tantalizing him. But it doesn't necessarily bring happiness. And what does this mirror do? It's described in the movie that it reveals our deepest, most desperate desires of our heart. And this is what the name is called, the mirror of Erised, which is actually desire spelled backwards. So it's a reflection. It doesn't show your face, but it shows your heart's desire. So this is what it does. It displays the deepest desires, whoever looks into it. So this is what we're doing. We're looking into this material nature and we're fulfilling our desires. And as Harry was warned, he said, men have been wasted away and driven mad before this mirror. So this is like the verse in the 11th canto. It describes this. And he says, this verse is described in the 23rd chapter. Although present along with a struggling mind within the material body, the super soul is not endeavoring, but because he is already endowed with transcendental enlightenment, acting as my friend, he simply witnesses from his transcendental position. I, the infinitesimal spirit soul, on the other hand, have embraced this mind, which is the mirror reflecting the image of the material world. Thus, I have become engaged in enjoying objects of desire and am entangled due to contact with the modes of nature. So also in another verse in the same chapter of the Bhagavatam, there's a verse that says, the powerful mind actuates the functions of the material modes, from which evolve the different kinds of material activities in the modes of goodness, ignorance, and passion. From the activities in each of these modes develops the corresponding statuses of life. So this is Krishna's artistic ability. He's mixing these different modes of material nature, getting different colors and forms and shapes of these material bodies. We become, in the mode of goodness, we developed a saintly body or a wise person. We have more passion. We struggle for material success. If we're more ignorant, then we become cruel. We become lazy, sinful. So these conceptions are there. And these are different designations arranged according to Krishna's powerful energies. So it's described that one should therefore give up mental concoction and try to control the mind. But how can you even describe the mind? All the senses have been under the control of the mind since time immemorial. And the mind himself never comes under the sway of any other. He is stronger than the strongest, and his godlike power is fearsome. Therefore, anyone who could bring the mind under control becomes the master of all the senses. That's a verse in the same 11th chapter of the Bhagavatam. This is a godlike power it has. It's fearsome. So this is like an enemy, right? The mind can be your enemy or your friend. So if you want to fight an enemy, how do you fight him? How do you attack him? You have to attack him on the weakest point. But the mind is so powerful, as described here. How can you attack it? So therefore we use the intelligence. And we'll talk about that little time in the future here. We'll talk about that. But first, let's finish the mind. So we have to guard our mind. And in the same 11th canto, it's describing there that if you fail to conquer this irrepressible enemy, the mind, whose urges are intolerable and who torments the heart, many people are completely bewildered and create useless quarrel with others. Thus they conclude that other people are their friends, their enemies, or parties indifferent to them. So this is this false identification of the ego influencing us. And we have this bodily conception of life. But we're actually all eternal expansions of Krishna. But because we're identifying with this soul, we're conditioned by this material energy. So there's another verse in the 11th canto, and it says, persons who identify with this body, which is simply the product of material mind, are blinded in their intelligence, thinking in terms of I and mine. Because of their illusion of this is I, but this is someone else, they wander in endless darkness. So now we come to the intelligence. And if you look at the definition of intelligence in the Oxford Dictionary, it's the power of perceiving, learning, understanding, and knowing. Or in another dictionary, it says the ability to use your memory, knowledge, experience, understanding, reasoning, imagination, and judgment in order to solve problems and create a better situation for yourself. So in that same 11th canto, it describes how we should use our intelligence. As it said here, try to understand things, reason things. So it's described how we should act. Charity, prescribed duties, observance of major, minor, regulated principles, hearing from scripture, pious works and purifying vows all have their final aim in subduing the mind. Indeed, concentration of the mind on the supreme is the highest yoga. That's called the Bodhi Yoga. Like there's Bodhi, intelligent, and yoga means to link. Prabhupada doesn't define it as, you know, to link the intelligence, but he means action in Krishna consciousness, properly acting. And then in the next verse, it says here, if one's mind is perfectly fixed and pacified, then tell me, what need does one have to perform ritualistic charity and other pious rituals? And if one's mind remains uncontrolled, lost in ignorance, then of what use are these engagements for him? So continuing with the intelligence, we can see, we try to create artificial intelligence. But we have to understand what is real intelligence. There's a conversation that Srila Prabhupada gave in Mayapur in 1977. And Prabhupada's explaining. Real intelligence, you see in the flower how intelligent, colorful it is made. Every nature study. Study this machine, how intelligent. And just the hand coming up, this finger. Because we have to capture something, the nail is required. If it would have been all skin, you could not capture. How? And every machine is coming automatically. You study your body. And if the same machine, you produce a machine like that, automatically coming out, one thing, male machine, one female machine, and they'll bring another machine. Where is that thing? And here, God has made such a nice machine. So this is God. So just think how God is so intelligent, but yet he has his agent, Maya, which actually is one of his energies. Now see, God is intelligent, Prabhupada continues. God's servant, Maya, God says, give him a machine like that. Immediately she gives supplies. Curly says, Brahma, Maya, and Sarva, Prabhupada tries to quote there. He wants to still travel in this material world. He wants to go there. Then, all right, give him a machine. He's so kind. He's sitting in your heart. You want to do something, and he's so kind. Because you're a son, beloved. He says, these are not required. Better come back. Live peacefully. But we don't hear. No. We're like a naughty child. So, all right. Then Maya gives us a body. So Prabhupada wants a disciple to quote this verse. Ishvara sarva bhutani hridideshi arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani indrani udani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated on a machine made of material energy. So just see, so Prabhupada's supplying, and it's actually being supplied by Maya. And Srila Krishna doesn't really have anything to do. So Prabhupada continues. He says, just like I am an ordinary man, if I want to do something, and if I ask you, do this, I ask somebody, bring some money, I ask somebody, that you do this. So if an ordinary man can do, why God should do anything? So this is where Krishna just tells Krishna to do this and do that. And all his energies are working very nicely. And so we see that happening. So Krishna doesn't want us to be here, though. He wants us to go back home. So therefore, if we engage in devotional service, we get intelligence. Tesham satata yuktanam. That those who are constantly devoted to me, serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So this is Buddha Yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. That's the highest intelligence. And that's what's being described here. So if a devotee is not intelligent to make progress, Prabhupada says, on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord will give him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. So here we have, in the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about this mind and intelligence. The chanchalam himana Krishna. The mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it, I think, is more difficult than controlling the wind. So here we have the mind. It's so strong and obstinate, like we mentioned, that sometimes it overcomes the intelligence. Although the mind is supposed to be subservient to the intelligence takes over. And so it's very difficult to control the mind. And as Prabhupada describes in the purport, this painting, the individual is the passenger in the car of the material body, and intelligence is the driver. Mind is a driving instrument, and the senses are the horses. The self is thus the enjoyer or sufferer in the association of the mind and senses. So it is understood by great thinkers. So intelligence, here we see, is supposed to direct the mind properly. Intelligence is the driver. The mind is the reins, and the horses are the senses. And the soul there is just sitting in the chariot, suffering or enjoying according to its desires. And then we have another verse from, this is from chapter 2, Dayato Visayan Pumsa, that while contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. So here, Bhagavad Gita is explaining graphically how we're becoming attached and how we're wounded in the material world. And then from anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. And when memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when that intelligence is lost, one falls down into the material pool. But if a person is free from all attachment and aversion and is able to control his senses through the regulated principles of freedom, can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. For one thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon established. But one who is not connected in the Supreme can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? And it goes on. As a strong wind sweeps away the boat on the water, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Therefore, almighty armed, one whose senses are restrained from their objects is certainly of steady intelligence. So this is how we can curb the forces of sense gratification only by Krishna consciousness, or engaging all the senses in transcendental loving service. So we have some examples of people who have gone beyond this bodily identification. There's a story in the 11th canto of the Avanti Brahmana. And this Brahmana, he was suffering from other living beings and from higher forces of nature and from his own body. And he knew it was unavoidable, and it was being allotted to him by providence. So here, some cruel persons are harassing the Brahmana. And he knows his own body is suffering due to fever, thirst, hunger, all these different things. But he realized that I was suffering just due to my false identification with my body. And it's not the interaction of his body with external phenomena. Rather, he realized that he should not adjust his external situation, but to adjust his Krishna consciousness and realize that my actual identity is an eternal spirit soul. So these are some verses from that story of the Avanti Brahmana in the 11th canto. He says here, even while being insulted by low... This is Krishna actually talking to Uddhava still here. Even though while being insulted by the low-class men who are trying to effect his downfall, he remains steady in his spiritual duties, fixing his resolution in the mode of goodness. He began to chant the following song. So we're having examples of people who have actually controlled the mind, who have actually been able to use their intelligence. And this is what he said. These people are not the cause of my happiness and distress, neither are the demigods, my own body, the planets, my past work or time. Rather, it is the mind alone that causes happiness and distress and perpetuates the rotation of material life. If you say that these people are the cause of my happiness and distress, then where is the place of the soul in such a conception? This happiness and distress pertain not to the soul, but to the interactions of the material bodies. If someone bites his tongue with his own teeth, at whom can he become angry in his suffering? If you say that the demigods who rule the bodily senses cause suffering, still how can such suffering apply to the spirit soul? This acting and being acted upon are merely interactions of the changeable senses and their presiding deities. When one limb of the body attacks another, with whom can the person in that body be angry? So it goes on, and he's talking about how the soul himself, if he was the cause of happiness and distress, then how could he blame others, since happiness and distress would simply be the nature of the soul? So according to that theory, nothing except the soul actually exists. And if we were to perceive something besides the soul, that would be illusion. Therefore, since happiness and distress do not actually exist in this concept, why become angry at oneself and others? So it just goes on. And it describes this wonderful prayer that he chants. It's all regarding self-realization. So if you get a chance to read it, and those purports are just amazing in those purports. So then he, this is a real nice prayer. He says, I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nescience by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. This was approved by the previous acharyas who were fixed in firm devotion to the Lord, Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll go on to another example of someone who was beyond this fearful condition of the body. And this is a nice verse from the fifth canto. This is a story of Bharat Maharaj when he was going to be offered as up as a human sacrifice to goddess Kali. And because Kali knew he was such a devotee, that she came out and personally protected him. And this is the verse that shows how we, one, what it is like to be beyond these activities. Sukadeva Goswami then said to Maharaj Parikshit, O Vishnu Dada, those who already know that the soul is separate from the body, who are liberated from the invincible knot in the heart, who are always engaged in welfare activities for all living entities, and who never contemplate harming anyone, are always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who carries his disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, and acts as supreme time to kill demons and protect his devotees. The devotees always take shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, at all times, even if threatened by decapitation, they remain unagitated. For them, this is not at all wonderful. So this is a quality of a pure devotee, that even though his life is threatened, he's not afraid. So they're completely dependent on the Supreme Lord. So another example is of one going beyond one's own intelligence, because sometimes the intelligence can only go so far. The farthest that the intelligence can go is that I'm not very intelligent. So therefore, I have to seek someone who is more intelligent. And this is what happened in this pastime in the 12th canto, when Maharaj Jamunajaya was so disturbed that Parikshit was killed by this snake, that he decided to kill them all. So this is a couple of verses I'll read here. This is Suta Goswami narrating. Advised in this manner, what happened is Jamunajaya was told by Brihaspati to please stop, desist. He was more intelligent, so because he was a devotee, Jamunajaya actually listened to him. And he said, he honored the words of the great sage, and he desisted in performing the snake sacrifice. So then he says, this is indeed the Supreme Lord Vishnu's illusory energy, which is unstoppable and difficult to perceive. Although the individual spirit souls are part and parcel of the Lord, through the influence of this illusory energy, they are bewildered by their identification with various material bodies. And this is nice how it describes another reality here. But there exists a supreme reality in which the illusory energy cannot fearlessly dominate, thinking, I can't control this person because he is deceitful. In that highest reality, there is no illusory argumentative philosophies. This is actually a verse. Rather, there are true students of spiritual science constantly engaging in authorized spiritual investigation. In that supreme reality, there is no manifestation of the material mind, which functions in terms of alternating decision and doubt. Created material products, their subtle causes, and the goals of enjoyment attained by their utilization do not exist there. Furthermore, in that supreme reality, there is no conditioned spirit, covered by false ego and the three modes of nature. That reality excludes everything limited or limiting. One who is wise should therefore stop the waves of material life and enjoy with the supreme truth. So that's where we need to go. So that's where we want to desire the supreme place and fix our meditation there in the Supreme Lord. So there's more verses, but I will skip that. So in other words, once you tolerate the insults and never fail to show proper respect to any person, avoiding identification with the material body, one shouldn't create enmity with anyone. So this is what he learned from a higher intelligence, Brihaspati, to King Jamunajaya. So just a couple more slides here, we'll end. So Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, an intelligent person can detect the awkward position of material existence and thus begin to inquire as to what he is, why he is subjected to different kinds of miseries, and how to get rid of all miseries. And thus, by good association, an advanced intelligent person can turn towards the better life of self-realization. So this is Srila Prabhupada. And as he mentioned in the purport, it is advised, therefore, that an intelligent person associate with the great sages and saints who are on the path of salvation. By such association, one can receive instructions which are able to slacken the conditioned soul's attachment for matter. And thus, the intelligent man gradually gets rid of the illusion of matter and false ego and is promoted to the real life of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So this is, as Prabhupada mentions, the sages and saints, that this is their role, is to give us this knowledge. A sage, actually, the difference between a sage and a saint is that a sage deliberates about his position. But a saint, after deliberating, he actually incorporates it in his life. And this was Srila Prabhupada. He was both a saint and a sage. So Srila Prabhupada said, actually, Prabhupada is a saint and a sage. And he knows the Vedic scriptures, and he realizes it, and is on the path of salvation. But not only that, he can get others to follow that same path. So that's how we, you know, really gain high intelligence. And Prabhupada said, you know, why? Someone asked Prabhupada, why are you so intelligent? Prabhupada said, yes, I have to be intelligent to control you who are so intelligent, his disciples. So he said, and the intelligent person tells us like it is. He tells you that you're the problem. You're the person that's bad. You can't blame it on anyone else, just like the Avanti Brahmana. We are the problem. So this is the wisdom that the scriptures and the sages give us. And they give us knowledge of God, which we can't understand any other way except through being told. And now there's just two more slides here. And this is from the light of the Bhagavad. With the progress of the autumn season, the moist earth and muddy places began to dry up, and the green vegetation began to fade. This drying up and fading resembles the gradual disappearance of the false sense of affinity and ego. So this is what we do when we cultivate the human spirit. Gradually we're drying up this materialistic ego. Another analogy is like the coconut. It dries up and it becomes separated from the shell. So in the same way, this is what we want to do. Get freedom from this sense of false ego and liberate the soul. So the last verse from the light of the Bhagavat talks about illusion here. In the autumn, there is a gulf of difference between the day and the night. During the day, the extreme heat of the sun is unbearable. But at night, the moonlight is extremely soothing and refreshing. Similarly, Lord Krishna is soothing for both the gopis and the mundane man in illusion, who accepts the body as the soul. So this is where we are. As long as we're under illusion, we accept the body and we'll be unhappy. But we have to be, as described here, we want to experience the soothing nature of Krishna, just like the gopis have experienced that. So thank you for your kind attention. any comments or questions? Sorry, went over a little late here. 6 minutes, but if anybody's burning with a comment or question, now is your chance. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.